Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello, happy Christmas. Welcome to The Price of Football, the podcast that follows the money behind the beautiful game. I'm Kevin Day, and I'm joined by my financial elf, Kieran Maguire, Professor of Football Finance at the University. What is your actual title? Professor of...
I'm not a professor, I'm a nobody.
Why have I been calling you professor?
Well, I pay you money to do so.
Oh, well, why are you on the pod then? Kieran Maguire, so, but you do work at Liverpool University.
Yeah, I do. Though, yeah,
don't throw that bombshell in at me. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Kevin.
Let's not pretend that we're actually here together on Christmas Day, because that would be terribly sad. Also, let's be fair, what are you doing listening to our podcast on Christmas? What's gone so badly wrong with your Christmas Day that you're listening to our football podcast? Thank you for doing so, of course. And it's also available across the Christmas period until we come back in the new year. So, Merry Christmas to you all at home. It's going to be a short pod this week, but we wanted to bring you a Christmas special. So we're going to answer a whole bunch of your questions, and we're going to hand out our awards of the season so far. I think this is going to be show 13. I looked at the producer there, and all I got was a shrug, basically, which I don't know why I expected more, but there you go. As you can also tell already, it's a slightly more relaxed pod. We've all had a Christmas sherry or two. So there are questions and then awards, and then if you're lucky, I'll give you my special Brussels sprouts tip, which involves cheese. Anyway, first question comes from David Waugh, who's a Gillingham fan. It's quite a specific question, but it's a very interesting one. Gillingham advertised for a director of football finance, and one of the responsibilities, I don't know if David applied for this or just looked it up, he's like you, he's just obsessed with all things financial and checks CVs. But one of the things, it talks about monitoring away ticket money. Now, I was under the impression, like most people were, I think, that you only get money from away games in the FA Cup. But is a club like Gillingham or Palace, are they getting a share of the... It sounds old, so old-fashioned to say, a share of the gate for away games?
No, the gate receipts are held and collected by the home team. However, the away team will have had the responsibility potentially of selling tickets on behalf of the home team. So therefore, I think what will happen here is that you've got to, if you're Gillingham and you're playing Walsall, well, have you received the money from Walsall within 5 days of the match taking place? Because as we are fully aware, there are a number of clubs at present who are living from hand to mouth, and they are taking their time in getting that money across. So I think from Gillingham's point of view, it's phoning them up and saying, oi, where's the money?
So, well, two things. When you say 5 days, is that arbitrary? Have you just chosen 5 days as an example, or is that the legal requirement?
I think if you go through the EFL handbook, I think it's around about 5 days. There's no excuse for it being any longer. Let's face it, you've collected the money yourself as the away team selling tickets to your away fans. So therefore, you're not there to be given interest-free credit by the home team. So you got the money across fairly quickly.
This is actually more interesting. Apologies to David, it was an interesting question, but it's got more ramifications than I thought. So two things. So are you implying that there are clubs that are holding on to that money in a desperate attempt to stave off possible administration, or they're using it, they're robbing Peter to pay Paul, or they're just some clubs are mean and stingy and don't want to pay the money that they owe?
Well, as we know, that there are some clubs with rogue owners, there are some clubs who are robbing Peter to pay Paul. Having said that, I don't think the sums that we're talking about are significant, because the very nature of those clubs is that they're going to be struggling. They tend to be having, therefore, poor results as a consequence of that. And that means that they won't be taking thousands of fans to away matches, given that the nature of what we're really talking about here is in League One and League Two.
What also interests me is I'm going to say hello here to my friend Danny Tickets. It's not the most imaginative nickname, but his name is Danny and he works in the ticket office at Palace. But I pop in there to see him quite a lot. And I've often wondered why. There's quite an elaborate board with the numbers of away fans coming to Selhurst Park and the number of our fans going to other grounds. But they're very specific numbers. It never just says 3,000. It will say 3,901. So that's because they have to keep tabs on every single ticket that's sold. Because they're sending money to the club, basically.
Yes.
They'll
get a commission, but that won't be very significant. Effectively, the home club will be getting 90-95%. You might give them a 5% commission because they're doing us a favour by selling tickets for the away end. But that money actually belongs to the home club rather than the away club.
Well, and also, here's another... I was going to say, here's another question about a club and money, but we are the Price of Football podcast that talks about finances of football. So it's why I'm surprised that we've got a question about a football club and money. But Paul Worley, this is a really interesting question. So when a club is fined, so when, for example, Leeds were fined £200,000 for Spygate, where does that money go? Is it used for anything? Is there a pot? Is there like a fine money pot that the EFL... at the end of the season distributes to clubs, or is it spent on youth development? Is it spent on wallpaper?
This has actually caused issues as far as the EFL are concerned, because when they first introduced financial fair play and there were potentially huge fines being involved, if you think that QPR have been fined, Bournemouth have been fined, Leicester have all been fined by the EFL, and we're talking millions of pounds each time. Initially, the agreement was that money would then be distributed between the remaining clubs in the Championship. And that was the subject to a legal appeal. That money now, is my understanding, is given to good causes. So whilst we don't want to encourage bad behaviour, it's not, the footballers aren't getting bonuses, the football owners, football club owners aren't getting bonuses. This money, I believe, is now being distributed by the EFL and is going to charitable causes.
Oh, well, I wasn't expecting that to be the answer, actually, but as it's Christmas Day, I'm glad that is the answer. So would clubs do that? So when you read about a player, for example, being fined 2 weeks' wages, would a club be doing that as well?
On a club basis, I'm not certain that is the case. If you take a look to see what happened with Derby County with regards to their two players who'd been involved in the car accident, they were both fined 6 weeks' wages. Now, there's no evidence that Derby have given that to charity. I'm not saying they haven't, but I don't think that would necessarily be in their contracts. So that money could therefore be withheld by the club. But remember, all the clubs in the Championship are losing such large sums of money that they'll just see this as a way of recouping a small amount.
Now, this is a big question, but it's a question that a lot of football fans, I think, have been predicting the answer to for quite some time. It's a question from Richard Hill. Basically, every football fan of my generation, our generation, for years has been going, the bubble will burst eventually, transfer fees will have to stop growing, and it's not happened. So Richard's question is, if it's not happened already, when will Premier League income peak? And can BT and Sky sustain the vast amounts of money they're paying for football rights forever?
Well, domestically, it has peaked because the new deal, which is coming in 2020 for BT and Sky, is actually 10% less than the current deal that we're seeing.
Is it?
Yeah, because historically, BT and Sky, they didn't like each other, and therefore the way that they were trying to outdo each other was by outbidding for individual packages. They've now effectively reached an entente cordiale. Yeah, they're no longer parking their lawnmowers on each other's lawn.
Which of them would be the richer company? Sky, presumably.
Well, BT's actually the bigger company.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, because if you think about it, BT's had a monopoly in terms of its ability to deliver fixed phone lines. And time you've got internet, remember...
Fixed phone lines. Really?
You've got this thing called Openreach. So, BT get a slice of practically every connection in the UK. Sky have historically made their money from the satellite dishes and from subscriptions, And although there are significant millions, as far as Sky is concerned, it's not to the same extent that BT have generated over the years. So BT is a bigger company, but BT's focus is not on broadcasting. It's been on telecommunications, whereas with Sky, they were using... They were using the Sky TV as a bridgehead to try to muscle in on BT's market. They've now sort of kissed and made up, and as a consequence, in the last round of TV negotiations, they both put in bids for less money because they're not trying to nick the partitions from each other. However, what we're also seeing is that there is still growth in overseas markets for the rights. So if we take a look at what happened between 2017 to 2020, it was 5.1 million from BT and Sky, 3.1 million from all of the other overseas broadcasters. That's now dropped to around about 4.5 for BT and Sky, and the overseas broadcasters, I think, are within touching distance of matching that. The consequence for that is that we could now see pressure from, you've got a TV company in Malaysia or India saying, is there any chance of changing the kickoff times to suit our audiences? So, because, you know, look, we're paying all this amount of money, the match was due to be, you know, BT and Sky don't want it themselves, it was due to kick off at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, any chance you could change it to 11 a.m. on Sunday, because that will suit our audience, and we'll throw in an extra 500 grand for the privilege of that. So, you know, we're already paying you a lot of money. That will be put to the owners of the two clubs, and, you know, potentially you could see that type of thing taking place.
Well, talking of change kickoff times, if Amazon decide to take football seriously in future years, can BT and Sky actually compete with them financially?
No, I mean, Amazon's pockets are deep, and, you know, remember that Amazon is a global entity. Where, and it's also based mainly in the US, so the size of the markets there are far bigger. A lot will depend on what Amazon sees as the benefits. Sky cannot survive without Premier League TV rights. Premier League TV rights, they're the crack cocaine of subscription broadcasting. Amazon is a far broader business model from that, because, you know, you're getting your Kindle books, you know, I get my dog food and, you know, lots of crazy stuff.
Of course you do. You mean you get your dog food from Amazon?
I do.
Who gets their dog food from Amazon?
You can get a 12-kilo bag of WAG, and I hope they're listening, but a 12-kilo bag of WAG from Amazon will turn up within 24 hours. If Finley, the price of football dog, is short of stuff, and I just ping a button on my iPad, and the following morning it arrives.
Well, I've got a cat. I just go down to Co-op. They serve her favourite kibbles. Why would you...
Because it's cheaper and it's more convenient.
How big's the... That's a big bag as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it lasts him ages.
All right, anyway, listen, because you're so clever, you've actually answered the next question as well, which is from Daniel Bright, which is about deals to show football outside of the UK and who negotiates them. So I'm sorry he's answered your question, Daniel, but I thought I'd mention you on Christmas Day anyway. So now, Gareth Howes, this is basically off the back of what we were talking about last week, is how much it costs to sack a manager. But he was wanting to know that again. So not only have you just answered the question, the next question, last week you answered the question that's been asked this week. So that, you are good. But it's another question, and it's an interesting one. We know that loan players can't play against their parent club. Most 99% of loan deals include that caveat. But there are times when clubs sell players or move players on and still subsidise their wages, aren't they? So can they... then not play against a club that they've technically been sold to?
If they have a... there'll be a variety of sell-on clauses embedded into a contract, one of which could conceptually be, though I've never seen this employed in practice, conceptually you could say, we are going to subsidise the wages for the next two seasons, so therefore, as part of the deal, you can't play against your previous club. And that would be acceptable. And what we are seeing with so many players on big contracts in the Premier League being reluctant to take a step down in wages, and, you know, the famous one, I think, was Nikola Zigic at Birmingham. He came in on a fee. He was on 60 grand a week one season in the Premier League, and then 3 years in the Championship on that money. If Birmingham had managed to sell him on, there's no way people would have matched his wages, and if it was another Championship club, they could have enforced that as a condition.
Uh, Thank you for the questions, everybody. We look forward to coming back next week when we'll have a new year. We'll have the same pod because there's no need to change the successful format, but do keep your questions coming. I apologise to those of you listening over Christmas who weren't expecting references to crack cocaine and dog food delivered in giant sacks. This sometimes pod takes a different direction. It's live. What can I do, especially when Kieran's an out-of-control maverick for the most part? I think we should balance that with the promised Brussels sprout tip.
Oh yes, please.
Because I'm a very good cook. Obviously, just parboil them for 3 minutes. Then what you need to do, cut them in half. All right, then get a mug. Right, get a top quality stock cube. And boiling water in that, and then a little bit of Parmesan cheese. All right, fry the sprouts for two minutes at most. Pour that little bit of stock in, bubble it. Oh, best sprouts you'll ever get.
I'll ask.
Seriously. Yeah, do that. Oh, and add a turkey. So don't just have the sprouts. we've our producers come up with this now, because we did want to bring you a pod over Christmas. We thought you'd miss us if you weren't here for 2 weeks. So we're going to have a sort of impromptu awards ceremony here, which I believe Kieran, being an out-of-control maverick, has come up with a slightly rude name for. What do you want to call them?
I think they should be the Scummies.
The Scummies, okay. Well, they're going to be the Scummies from now, even though... Well, so the Scummies, well, Villain of the Year, first of all. I know who my Villain of the Year is. Have you got some nominations, or do you just want to go straight in?
No, I've got four nominations. Okay. Mike Ashley, because he is the Scourge of Newcastle.
Yep.
Ken Anderson, the former owner of Bolton Wanderers, who, it was revealed, took a 250k payoff almost in order to leave the club. The Glazer family, for forcing Manchester United fans to form another club many years ago, and Steve Dale at Bury. So those are my four nominations. And of those, who do you think would...
I know who my winner is, because I did the usual amount of research for this, which was a cursory glance at my phone on the train in. Without a doubt, Steve Dale is the villain of the year. The Glazers... And Mike Ashley, historical villains, yeah. Basically. The guy at Bolton, that was. If you're a Bolton fan, you'll be furious. But you know, to be responsible for the demise of a long-standing football club with history and tradition, there can only be one winner of the Villain of the Year award, without a doubt.
Absolutely, and he gets my vote as well. If you think that within 24 hours of owning the club, he'd stop paying the direct debits and the standing orders. He then set up a football club called Bury FC Heritage Limited and started transferring the trophies and some of the assets of the football club. So part of the reason why Bury was never sold, because you never knew what you were actually buying.
It's the second bit that's almost as bad as the first bit, isn't it? The fact that he just brazenly carries on doing stuff like that. Without any, so, and he's beyond, well, he was beyond the EFL's reach when he was in charge of Bury, but clearly he's further beyond the EFL's reach now, isn't he?
And he's got no sense of feeling for anybody who supported that club, because Bury was supposed to have been wound up. They were supposed to have been liquidated at the start of December, and he put in another application for that to be kicked down the road further. So Bury Football Club still exists. He is still the owner. And those people who just want some form of genuine closure, because then potentially a Phoenix club could at one point in time start to consider buying Gig Lane or putting in a bid for Gig Lane. But while Steve Dale's there, they've got no chance.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
I'm not entirely sure you and I got the same email off our producer guy, but it is Christmas. Who knows what time of day he's been doing what, basically. But I was asked for a hero of the year, and to be honest, the nature of this pod doesn't throw up many heroes, but I think if there was a hero of the year for me, it would be Bill Kenwright, who A, is one of the nicest people in football, but B, at least made a genuine effort to make a financial contribution to saving Bury, and it, for various reasons, mainly the EFL, I understand, it didn't work, but at least he had the style and the sense of romance and injustice to try and save the club.
I agree with you entirely. It was a case of computer says no from the EFL, and you know, as we know, I think any football fan of any club will have sympathy for those fans, and this is another example of the fact that the governance in the game is not fit for the people that support it.
Now, this next category, I'm going to sit back and leave to you, because I haven't got a dog in this fight, basically. Because the next category is Creative Accountant of the Year. Now, I can see by your body language already, you've sat forward, you've picked up your piece of paper, your jaw's jutting out. This is your territory. You seem to have quite a few nominations down there. But I dread to think what's going to happen when I ask you who are the best bound accounts of the season. Because you're so coming in most creative accountant of the year, and also I think it's not necessarily a good thing, is it, creative accountancy?
No. Well, I've got three nominees here. First of all, Sheffield Wednesday. So they sold the ground to a company which didn't exist.
I don't know. I'm just, again, you just laugh at this. You've told me all this, but I'm still laughing at the sheer chutzpah of it. It's just the fact that it's allowed to happen.
And yeah, absolutely. And then they've got some unusual sponsorship arrangements. One is from this D Taxis company, which doesn't own any taxis. And I got into trouble here because I Googled fake taxi, which turns out to be a rather naughty website. And Mrs.
Dear.
M was looking over my shoulder at the time, saying, what are you looking at that for? Mm. So I go, well, I'm looking up for football governance issues for some of our awards here with Kevin.
And nice, she says, try. Well,
she says, you're trying to lead me astray.
This is not this season to be talking about what fake taxi actually involves, but it's not a taxi I'd ever like to get into, to be perfectly exactly. Well, no, actually, to be fair, one of them I wouldn't mind. The other one I definitely wouldn't want to get into. But we've had Brussels sprout recipes. Let's keep to that. So, okay, Sheffield Wednesday.
So we've got Sheffield Wednesday. We've got Derby County, who have somehow managed to value Pride Park at £80 million, even though Coventry valued the Rico last week at, and that's gone down in value. And Derby are also the only club who, when a player reaches the end of his contract, which you'd normally think would necessitate a Bosman, seem to think that player has value in the account. So Derby are that impressed me. I went through the small print of that, and even I was scratching my head.
Just briefly, tangentially, Wayne Rooney was a guest on the football show I work on at the moment, which is an Amazon show, coincidentally. If only as many people watched the football as watched our show, we'd be laughing. And he was absolutely charming. He was really delightful guy. Very interesting, very articulate, very passionate, very emotional. Very excited about getting to play football for Derby County. Obviously, we didn't ask him this question. How much would Derby be spending on getting Wayne Rooney to the club?
Well, I don't think they would have had to pay a transfer fee to the Washington club he was playing for. He will be on a competitive salary, but my understanding is that the sponsors, 32 Red, Derby managed to negotiate a deal with 32 Red that the sponsorship will increase, and that will effectively cover a large proportion of his salary.
Okay. And your final nominee?
My final nominee is the Football Association of Ireland.
Aha, yes, we talked about them 2 weeks ago.
Yes, yeah. They were so creative with their accounting that the auditors said, we don't believe a single word of this, it's all fiction, and walked away and refused to sign off the accounts. And the only thing that they did, those silver-tongued accountants, was left the FAI with a bill for $250,000 for the privilege.
Is that a common practice that auditors will just...
No, that as far as accountants are concerned, A, it's rare, and it's as damning as you can possibly get. To say that we've gone in and we've looked at the books and we can't add up the numbers ourselves. We've got no confidence. The claim that the dogs ate them is one which we're not prepared to countenance, and they've effectively. They're not prepared to put their name to them.
We know your dog won't about them because your dog's full of Amazon dog food. Your dog definitely won't. So who's your winner?
I'm going to go with Sheffield Wednesday.
Okay.
I think the on both income and the issues with regards to the stadium, I think that puts them ahead of anybody else. At the same time, they have been charged by the EFL. As has the club owner, as has the previous chief executive of the club. And as a football fan, I don't want them to have a points deduction, because I don't think that money should be dictating anything in terms of what's happening on the pitch for issues like that. Wednesday fans, they're good people, and they deserve 3 points for a win.
That's exactly it. Whether they're good people, bad people, indifferent people, the fact that it's the fans who eventually get punished, any points deduction is punishing the fans, who are the lifeblood of the club and who weren't responsible for any of the problems that were caused.
Exactly.
Now, the final category is to do with my eyebrows have come in for a lot of conversation since the very first pod. My eyebrows are buff now, as they've had so much up and down exercise. So Guy, our wonderful producer, basically asked me for my eyebrow razor of the year. And I found it almost impossible, because I was lying awake thinking back through all the pods, going, well, it'll have to be that. No, it'll have to be that. And it's almost a pod. So I think, though, I've gone for Pogba's agent, I think. So just remind our listeners at home before we release them back into the world of Christmas exactly how much Paul Pogba's agent made for a deal that he didn't actually negotiate.
Well, he did negotiate it. Juventus wanted to sell, the player wanted to move, and Manchester United wanted to buy the player. And he earned 26 million euros, rather than pounds, as a result of that. And if you take a look at Football Leaks, which was in Der Spiegel, part of the reason for that fee was creating interest in the player.
That was the eyebrows bit. Kieran, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Kevin.
Who have Brighton got tomorrow, Boxing Day?
We're away Spurs.
Oh,
I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'll probably bring Amazon with me as well.
Just
to watch what's happening 2 minutes later.
Yeah. Will Amazon be expecting extra people to sign up for Boxing Day games? Or do you think most of the subscriptions would have happened for the early games as well?
I think people will have signed up on the back of what they saw and heard about last week, because the feedback was positive. I think some of the innovations were good, but also what people like you and me might be able to do is as well as being able to say, well, I want to watch four matches of football today. By the way, the Amazon Prime sale is about to go and start, and therefore other members of the family can get the benefits of the service.
Yes, I'm old-fashioned about my foot. I want to watch my football either at a ground or on a TV. Essentially, I'm too old to be looking at a phone. I don't even know which way to hold it. Also, you don't want Amazon to be too successful in case delivering your dog food slips down their list of priorities, basically.
I'll be straight on to the chief executive.
Did you buy the dog a Christmas present?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
what did you get him?
I got him a new Kong, which is one of these big rubber dog chewy things, and I stuff that full of sausage and cheese and God knows what else whenever I go off to a match.
Merry Christmas to you and your lovely wife and to your lovely dog. And to everybody listening, The Price of Football is a Dap Dip production. We recorded it here at the Comedy Store in the heart of Soho in London's West End. Please do give us some 5-star reviews on whatever platform you listen to, and that'll be a lovely Christmas present for us. We'll be back in the new year, and I'm going to let Kieran say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, and thank you for all for listening.
The Price of Football. Price of football.